for introducing me so kindly, and thank you, Chen Lu, for a couple of extra minutes, although I worked really hard to make sure this talk was under 15 minutes. So there'll be some time for questions, which I'm sure you'll have. The topic that I'm going to be discussing is the indicators of reduction in soil of using a manganese tube rather than the iron-coated PVC tubes. And the way this came about, so we had a lot of people using the iron-coated tubes and not having very much success with them in their particular settings. And these were particularly in the western states where the pHs of the soils were high. There was also a lot of fussing about how long it took to get the reduction and the removal of the iron oxide from the PVC. And so one of my dear colleagues at the University of Wisconsin when I was there said, well, why don't you just coat the tubes with manganese? And we didn't realize what a nice challenge this was going to be. And so my husband, Ed Duncanson, has worked very hard with the technicians at the National Soil Survey Center. I left that off of my of our location. And then Chen Lu Ping has been working with me to do some field installations. And he's been very helpful, his students and his technicians helping with that. So what I'm going to talk about, give you a little bit of an overview about the formation or the creation of this manganese indicator. And I'm indicating that as MIRS, and the iron-coated tubes are FIRS. The description of the field location and the installation process, the results that we came up with, some of the advantages that we noticed right away with the tubes, and also the problems with having a different type of oxide, an oxide that is much more touchy and temperamental than the iron oxides, and then our future plans. So the role of IRIS in the hydric soil and determinations, the way we see this in the NRCS and the soil survey operations, is that, of course, the reducing conditions remove that oxide off of the paint from the iris. The planning stages is to identify suitable locations, and some of these locations, as I say, in the western states, in areas that have red parent material, there's suspected reducing conditions there, but there's no suitable hydric indicators to prove that the soils are wet, even though you may be standing in water when you're on these locations. We install and remove the tubes in a set time frame. With the manganese tubes, we're still trying to determine that time frame. And from that removal pattern, we get the interpretations, the confirmation of hydric conditions, and also these points then serve as a reference for setting up monitoring operations. Of course, you've seen this probably several times, and we know that down here in this region is where we're looking at with the iron iris tubes. This is the level that we're at in terms of the redox potential. But the manganese oxides, of course, can reduce at a much higher redox potential, just slightly below the nitrate reduction. And so we have this big area in between that we can compromise for in terms of time. We can replace the conditions for time with these tubes. And so one of the things that we can do is we can extend our pH. Here's the burn site line here and the ferrihydrite line here on a redox versus pH chart. And we can see that we've got this extension, as it were, of the pH range that we can get into the higher pHs at the same reducing potential. But we also, at say a pH 7, can remove that burn site at a much higher pH. And so my husband is a volunteer at the National Soil Survey Center, and I tasked him with this operation and said, let's make some burn site following a recipe that we'd obtained from another one of my colleagues at the University of Wisconsin. And we had lab technicians work very hard there to make the recipe to produce this synthetic burn site and to get this adduct cleaned out of all of the chloride ion. It's cleaned very, very well, and it's concentrated, and then it's aged. And I say for about 1 month, we're still trying to determine what our prime time period is that we can start putting this on. If you try to put it on right away, it just sort of sloughs off the PVC tube. It doesn't stick very well because it has too much water in its structure to really hold on very well. And so the PVC tubes, before they receive the paint, are prepared by cleaning them strong with a strong acetone cleaning and then etching them fairly hardly, fairly coarse, with sandpaper. And the reason for that etching will become apparent a little bit later. I'll show you what goes on with that. The Bernasite solution is then painted on the tubes, and it has a much different appearance than the iron oxide. It is almost like a satin texture rather than that shiny semi-gloss and glossy appearance that the ferrihydrite girthite mixture makes. And so you have this almost, it looks like it's powder on the tube, but when you rub your hand over it, it doesn't come off. So our first installation of these was with Chen Lu Ping's field class that goes up to the North Slope of Alaska. This is Sukapak Mountain in the Brooks Range. It's on the south face of the Brooks Range. It's essentially a limestone marble mountain. And you can see here, there's the front face of the mountain, is a large Piedmont or apron fen that comes off of here. It's underlain by permafrost, and it has, it's the mountain itself is, like I say, a limestone, so the water is charged and carbonate saturated. And there's frost mounds that are prevalent here, and they're even more prevalent since the fen comes down and the hydrology essentially comes down the gradient this way. And right here is the Dalton Highway, and the Dalton Highway, of course, paralleling the Alaska pipeline, kind of stops that water that melts in the summertime and creates these bubbles, as it were, and then the frost pushes them up. And this is the types of soil you'll see with these frost mounds. This is an older frost mound. These are typic aqua orothels. They have the Alaska redox indicator, A4, and the A9 Alaska glay. This is an older, like I say, relic. This is the carbonates, the marl that is formed up there. And then these are some of the redoxam, whoops, I'm sorry, go back. Redoxamorphic features that are right here. And this is a more recent, when we pulled it out in the wet profile, you can see the glade conditions down here. As the permafrost melts away, this becomes more oxidizing. So that's why you see the iron concentrations. And the soil characteristics themselves from this location essentially shows that we do have depletions and masses that are frequent through there. We do have the organic layer over the top, 5 to 13 centimeters. The pH of these, of the solution, we had the students that were along on this trip measure the pH and the EH conditions. The pHs are around 8 to, I think it was 7.8 was the lowest pH we got, around close to 9 in some cases. And the EH conditions were around 120 to 135 plus millivolts. So the installation for the manganese tubes follows the same standard protocol that we do with the iris tubes. You just use a little probe and you put the tubes in. And in our installations here, we put 10 of the manganese tubes in little nests with a single iron tube. And the little nests, you can hardly see them here. And we had to put, there's 3 of them here, but we had to put a little stick up so we could find them later. And this was an area of about 100 meters square that we installed 10 manganese tubes and 5 iris. When we recovered the iris, this was 4 days later after we had gone up to the North Slope and looked around on permafrost soils and then came down on the way back to Fairbanks, recovered the manganese tubes and took them out. We rinsed them off, and you can see that there is removal of these. And this shows pretty nicely here is the 10 tubes laid out. And 7 of them have significant removal within the 6 inches of the surface. 6 weeks later, another class went up and pulled out the iris tubes. And this was the evidence that we had on the iris tubes. We had pyrite forming on here, and the fact was the iron up here was darker. This was a darker red than when we installed them. And we think that this was probably caused by this semi-stable siderite moving the iron around, because these are iron charge systems as well. And so we think we had siderite moving the iron, and then when it got to be oxidizing, then plating out on the iris tubes, some of the iron iris tubes. To validate whether or not we were really seeing something, we could put the manganese tubes into a moderately well-drained location near Fairbanks, because we thought, well, maybe the manganese oxide just comes off just being in soil, regardless of reducing conditions. And so what we did was we put these in, and after 7 days pulled them out, and you see that there's a little bit of spotty removal here and there. But a bigger problem that we realize with the manganese tubes is that there's a lot of scratching that goes on. And this is going to be particularly telling here when Chen Lu and his technician, Gary Michelson, went out to Adak Island, where there was volcanic ash soils. Again, no hydric indicators to really show that these were wet soils, but they are, in fact, aquans. And after 3 months, these are the iron iris tubes. After 3 days, these are the manganese iris tubes. And so we see that there's removal that goes on, but we also see that there's a lot of confusion here because there's scratching. And this is what I want to show you a little bit of a close-up on right here, is the scratching effect. And we have to say that putting them into this fairly recent ash deposit was probably one of the most harsh things we could do, because it was just like putting it into sandpaper and just sandpapering them down and up. And the way that we installed the tubes was to use a sleeve protector. And basically the sleeve protector, and my husband has one over here and he's holding it up, is just simply a thing you can buy at Home Depot to protect fluorescent light bulbs. You can slash it down the center, make it to size, slip it in with the tube and pull it out afterwards and leave your tube in place. However, we can't do that to recover the tubes, so the scratching that you see comes off after any reducing conditions have happened, or reduction removal. So one of the things you can see in here is you can see these spots. These are clearly removal by reduction. And even though you have the sloughing effect that might happen with the sanding, that you can clearly distinguish what is a sanding removal, because there's still some of the manganese oxide embedded in the scratching, the grooves that we put in the tubes to begin with. And where it's clearly removed, it is much, much lighter color. So the manganese oxide stains its tube until it's removed by reduction. So our conclusions are is that the manganese iris tubes worked well in these high pH soils. And a great thing for people who are interested in hydroperiods, critical hydroperiods, also we had one consulting soil scientist along with us on this class trip, and she was very, very excited by the fact that it only took us 4 days to get the removal rather than 6 weeks that she would have to leave them in there. And in Alaska, that's pretty important, because you may spend several thousand dollars getting to a location and you want to get your work done in a short period of time. The manganese iris tubes are more likely to scratch. That's a misfortune that I don't know how we'll deal with that. The way that we can deal with it is that we can see that there's clear differentiation between the removal spots from reduction and that's been removed by scratching, because we have got, or the abrasion, because we've left those grooves in there from the preparation. The future work will on the manganese tubes will focus on going through the acceptable technical standards, which includes looking at these in mesocosms, controlled environments, and this is being carried out by a NRCS employee and a student at the University of Florida, Dr. Yong Kong Lee's student. Christine Coffin is going to be building, has built these mesocosms, is getting them ready, and these are marl soils from the Everglades region. And she is going to have them instrumented and replicated and homogenized, and we'll find out, I guess, a little bit later about what homogenization and mesocosms can do. And hopefully we'll have at least a couple of field installations with monitoring wells, piezometers, and full instrumentation. In New Mexico, in January, we're planning to go to the White Sands Missile Range to some high water table gypsiferous soils there, and these will be very short-term installations, because, of course, the Missile Range does not want us leaving strange instruments out in their particularly sensitive areas. And these, again, are wet soils that have no suitable hydric indicators, but many people who've been out there and have walked on these know that these soils are wet. And so I'd like to finalize this by saying that we hope that this, in the future, will be a valuable tool to people who are doing wetland studies, hydric soil studies, and can use these instruments to their best advantage to look at short-term hydric conditions and reducing conditions, and hopefully we'll be able to make this a successful venture. And I thank you very much for your attention, and we'll take some questions. And I did want to say that we have some examples up here afterward when we get to a break, if you want to take a look at them.
We have time for several questions.
As I understand it, you scanned in the surface of these?
We're talking about a scanning in to determine the amount of removal. We just did a visual on this one because we ran into some difficulties with our IT people about installing a freeware digital.
Is there a way you could perhaps scan it in and maybe remove those striations?
The striations. We should be able to remove that with the digital imaging software. And I think that would probably help quite a bit. Plus, when you actually see this, you're going to see that there's a difference in coloration. It may be not significant to us, but I think it might be more sensitive. The computers are more sensitive, and they will pick that up. And so, yes, we can pick up that geometry you're talking about. Yes, Mark.
Cindy, did you do any X-ray diffraction to see what minerals you got?
Mark's asking about X-ray diffraction to identify the minerals. No, we have not done the follow-up on that. We are planning on it. Marty Rabenhorst has given me some pretty good ideas as to how to go about doing this. April Ullery is interested in following up on the study and the minerals, because we got to see what happens when we age that paint, the same way that they determined that aging the ferry hydrate solution and forming girthite in it was the way to make it stick. So we've not done that yet, but that's future work that we're planning to undertake. Yes, Marty.
A question about your White Sands expedition. Mm-hmm. Are there plants growing in these low areas? Is there a source of organic materials? I guess I'm wondering that to sort of drive the reduction as opposed to they're just being wet in that setting.
That's a very good question, because one of the things that we've always been querying about is whether or not these dry, in these arid areas, are we actually going to have enough organic carbon to force a reducing condition, and to allow that removal. There are some plants growing nearby. I believe that the hydrology allows some dissolved organics to go through there, so at least if we have some dissolved organics growing nearby, then there's some specific vegetation, some gypsophytes, I guess, that grow in there, and as long as there's water, they're moving the dissolved organics through, and I'm hoping that will be enough. This is going to be another test. As I said, this proof of concept right here is kind of light on the science end, but opens up the door to a lot of future investigations. Yes, yeah, Mark?
Maybe Lenore, maybe you would be the one to answer this, but what does the technical committee think about raising the sort of standard of EH to something as high as manganese? I mean, you were talking about 500s and things like that, depending on the pH.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
I mean, we often think about iron as being the standard, and it's pretty low.
Mm-hmm. The standard now is not iron.
And Lenore's answer to what the standard is that it's not. It's a floating standard.
Pretty close to the girthite line, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was altered from the girthite line based on. So they would not be, it's supposed to be aerobic conditions and not iron, because that's the definition for asbestos.
Yeah.
So I don't think this would be an issue.
Yeah. So the clarification on that is that it's based on anaerobic conditions, not simply on the EH alone. And the reason that we wanted to make these manganese tubes is to help some of our folks out in the western states that can never reduce to a level that iron will be removed. Yes, Karen?
So you mentioned the tubes have to be in for 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
But isn't the technical standard 2 weeks of reducing conditions?
That's a good question, because it is, the technical standard is at 2 weeks. Again, we may not be able to use these as specifically as we can iris, and I would use the iron iris in tandem with them, is what I would like to do. And primarily what I'm interested in, and this was something that came up in areas that have seasonal water tables that restrict the emplacement of septic systems. When you have frost in and it creates a seasonal water table that literally floods the surface, these folks up in, this is northern Wisconsin, Minnesota, some of these areas that have the seasonal frost tables want to know when that seasonal perching occurs. And I would encourage them to use both of the styles of tubes, but to be removing them successively over time to see when this happens, to install them in nests such that it allows them to monitor that. It's a monitoring proxy. Rather than putting in expensive wells and putting in out equipment that could get tampered with or stolen, if you get one of these PVC tubes stolen, who cares? You know, it's not a big expense. And so the consulting soil scientists are particularly interested in this, but I would recommend the installation last that long, except when they have conditions that they might have to write exceptions for. Good question.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.